One of the things that I have seen through the years is that there, when you come to small groups, there is an awful lot of healing that takes place in small groups. And the students of the 90s need an awful lot of healing. And I've often wondered that how Christian counseling really works when it's done and the people that are being counseled are not in a small group where they can begin to work out relationships, and they sort of buzz into a counselor's office and buzz out and live independent, isolated lives, and they're not really living in community. And I think we're designed to live in community. And so I think what we're doing is strategic to helping people, is strategic in discipling people. And it's what we're all about, really, is small groups. So what I would like, I would really feel like our time was successful if tonight you went away with a couple of ideas that were practical for your situation. And I've put together a handout that we'll spin through maybe a little later. I want to get us in some small groups and then come back, and then get back in small groups and then come back to do some stuff. And one thing that I think is really important is to assess the needs of a group, your group. Now, let's say that, how do I have it on the, this is believers like on your handout, and this is unbelievers, and this is churched, and this is the unchurched. Now, what we're going to play like tonight that we are is that we are a staff, and we have a gigantic ministry, and we're all called to work together in this gigantic ministry. I mean, there are hundreds and hundreds of students, and we are here to plan small groups for these hundreds and hundreds of students. And so the way we look at these hundreds of students is that we got together and we said, well, you know, basically we could divide these students into four groups. You've got churched believers. I mean, we've got students that are coming here that have been in church. They are believers. When they come to this campus, they're going to be ready to roll. And they've been in a youth group. They've been to Falls Creek down here in Oklahoma. They've been to Centrifuge at Glorietta. I mean, these kids are good kids. They're church believers, and they are true believers. They don't know a whole lot about walking with Christ, but they certainly want to, and they have had hundreds and hundreds of sermons preached at them and probably know nothing about how to really put it together, but they're church believers. And we're also going to have some students this year, a pretty big group that are churched unbelievers. They probably don't know that, but we do. They'll look a lot like these because they go to church, but they really are unbelievers. And we really have that particular need represented. And then you have coming to this campus, unchurched believers. These are kids that were in campus life, FCA. Somehow, they have gotten saved. But it was not, maybe a friend witnessed to them, but they've never really gotten involved in church. They've never been in a youth group, but they believe in God. And if statistics, the surveys are an indicator, there is a sizable number of those in America, in every town in America, and they'll be on our campus. And they've never been a part of anything that's organized. They might have just floated to here, but never really a part of anything. And then we have, coming to this campus, some hardcores, unchurched unbelievers. Now, our goal, because we're all working here on this campus, and there's so many of us, and we've already got this great ministry going, our goal is to try to figure out small groups that will attract and minister to all four of those targets. Now, let me say parenthetically, on your campus, it would be extremely helpful for you to think about what kind of students do we attract in this group. Where the students we reached last year, who were they? How did we meet them? Now, that may not be the group of students you want to attract next year. You may say, well, every student we got was a church believer. And we really desire to reach some unchurched believers. And so you change your target group, and you have to bring everybody in your ministry around to seeing that as your point target, okay? Or maybe you're just inundated with church believers, and that is what God has you on that campus to do. And if you train those unchurched believers, people are going to get saved. So I'm not talking about the only people, the only ministry that does evangelism is the one that targets these people. I don't believe that. But I do believe that it is extremely helpful to know what group you're targeting and to design not just your small groups, but everything you do to reach that particular target. And these can be subdivided in terms of a specific campus. You know, you could take, let's say, church believers. We subdivide that Baptist. That's a subdivision of the general category of church believers. So that kind of, that could become a target, and it could be subdivided beyond that to Southern Baptist, and it could be even subdivided more than that to Southern Baptists who are freshmen, and that is exactly the target group of this ministry at OU. That is who they are aiming for and who they get. Now, that's the people that are going to be most responsive when you go and say, oh, you're a freshman? And what percentage of people are Baptist here that are freshmen, Southern Baptist? Anybody know? Bobby, you worked here.
I'm not sure, but in freshmen, about half the students involved in the freshman team came from a Baptist background.
Okay.
So you get a lot of wash over, and probably one out of seven or eight were not Christians.
Okay.
We joined the freshman team, maybe one out of ten.
So after you do this for a few years, you'll begin to figure out some statistics. You begin to track stuff and work on it. That's part of why they're so effective here. And that's what I was trying, one thing I was trying to say the other day. But we're not going to go into all this kind of niche marketing. What we are, we're this giant staff with a ministry that draws people from all four of these quadrants. And so what we're going to do is design small groups to meet the needs of these people. So they're about 12 of us here. That's good. We'll have three in each group. And is that right? Three, or four in each group? No, three in each group. All right. So let's put you three together, and you three, Lenny and George and Dale and Troy and, what's your name again?
Carrie.
And Bobby, and then you four together. All right? And so why don't you guys just get up, sit on the floor in a circle. You've been sitting in enough chairs. And tell you what I'd like to ask you to do. You guys right here are group number one. You're going to report to the whole group because we're a staff, and we've broken down our staff into these four teams. And you guys are going to take some time, and you're going to brainstorm and try to assess what the needs of these people are. What do they need? What would their needs be? And if you could come up with, you know, not 15 needs, but maybe three needs, three things that it would be possible to do that these people need, okay? And they feel they need it. You know, it's kind of a need that they could feel. Okay, so you guys are going to take church believers, number one, this Christian student who shows up here, what are three needs that this person has? You might write down eight needs to start with as you brainstorm, and then come back to three. And then you'll share with this group what you think three needs of that group are. You guys are quadrant two. You are unchurched believers. You've been in Youth for Christ and FCA at home. Your parents are Roman Catholics. You haven't been to church in 6 years. And you somehow find your way over here to the BSU. And what do you need? Okay? And you can come up with maybe eight needs, but you'll tell us what you think three needs are that could be met. This group here is going to be church unbelievers. You guys get the church unbelievers, these people who are slippery and they come over here to the BSU and
cute girls.
That's exactly why they're here. They're looking for girls and the girls are looking for guys. And what are their needs? What do those people need? And what are three things that you think they need that you could meet? And you guys are the unchurched unbelievers. You kind of get what we're doing here? Okay. So, I just, you know, it's been a long week, and I just sort of, repetition is good. So we're going to take, give you about 10 minutes to think through this. If you get done ahead of time, we'll gather back and have the reports shared. So go. Okay. Okay, let's have a little feedback. A lot of you work alone on a campus. You don't have a staff to do this. Give me some feedback on what we just did. What did you think of that kind of process of just what we did in 10 minutes? You look pretty responsive. Melody, what did you think of that?
Well, I mean, my first response when you said that is it would be wonderful to have people to bounce ideas off of and say, well, this is what I think their needs are. What do you think? And it's wonderful.
Okay.
Amen.
Amen.
Yeah, I felt like I really work well in groups, and that was really nice to be able to think through that with some other people.
Okay. Troy, you have a group. What did you think? This just seemed like hard work to you.
Well, I thought it was great. We got done early.
Yeah. Talk about NBA basketball. Any idea? Ed, what'd you think of that process?
Well, I enjoy groups like Bobby, and just hearing from the different people helped me begin to think more. Like, we were wrestling with authentic needs and then heartfelt needs, and mm-hmm. So it was helping me to think of two different tracks.
You know, I wonder if it would be possible for students to think in these terms, and if you don't have a staff, to somehow be able to gather students, teach them this little simple four quadrants, break them down, get them thinking. I think it'd be a step toward teaching them to be strategic in how they think. And so if you don't have a staff where you can go in your basement or, you know, wherever and, you know, spend 3 days thinking through this, then use your students for initial ideas, bounce ideas off other directors. If you're trying to reach a group and you think, I don't know if this is right or not, call another director on the telephone just to say, hey, I need some counsel here. Is this crazy or does this seem like this might be a good idea? Because I really do believe that strategic thinking in terms of small groups is what we've got to learn to do. Because most of us, when you see on a BSU program small groups, you think that what we would talk about is Bible study groups in the dorms. Usually, I mean, that's what I would have always thought about until I started studying the whole issue of small groups and kind of figured out, you know, that there was a whole lot more to it than that. And once I began to figure out what there was to it, I would lead small groups and I wouldn't know why they worked well and I wouldn't know why they didn't work well. And I just was clueless about it. But once I began to study that, do some reading. This book that they have over, or had, they had one copy, and I think you bought it, on leading small groups. And, you know, once you begin to read resources and think about it, it expands what you're doing. I think that's one of the things that Hope Baptist does such a good job of, is helping their small group leaders see what's going on in a group and strategically plan their groups.
What's the name of that book?
Leading Small Groups by Judy Hamblin or Hamlin. And I would say that if you want help in processing small groups or whatnot, get Bobby Pruitt to come to your campus. Get John Straps on to your, come to your campus. You know, when we think of people coming to our campus, you know what we usually think about them doing? Speaking. Yeah, the least memorable thing for students. But what if you brought one of these guys that have tremendous skills in analyzing small groups and thinking, you brought them to your campus and let them speak. But I mean, work them to death before that. Lay out your small group stuff. Let them look at it. Let them help you think with it. And to me, that's how we can really learn, because I think the people that have been at Hope, and I say this because we had a pastor who came to our city from Hope. He'd only been there like a year or so, a year and a half. But his ability to discern what was happening in small groups was way up here. Because that is one thing that Hope Baptist Church does well. And their people are equipped to do that better than anybody I've ever met. So sick these guys that are here. Bring them in. Let them analyze you. Because they'll only help you. They won't come to criticize. They'll come to serve and help you. So what did group one say the needs of church believers? What would three needs be of church believers? And I'll let you speak into the microphone.
Okay, we said top three things were they need to be to have vision, to be challenged beyond where they had been in their youth groups growing up. Secondly, to have fellowship, fun, to meet Christian friends, to bond with a group. And thirdly, they needed training beyond what they had gotten quiet time.
Okay. So I'll write up here on the board, vision and fellowship and fun. Okay?
Training.
Fellowship, fun. Yeah, well, training is really fun if you're teachable. Okay, group two, you're the unchurched believers. What are those needs? Okay.
One is to understand the church, and that's both intellectually and emotionally. Fellowship, under that kind of family, affection, worship, overcoming barriers to growth, and under that, disobedience.
Okay, so you have developed some idea of the value of church / you know, being committed to a group of some kind.
Well, intellectually and emotionally after that was like people who just lack understanding of the church, and emotionally people who had negative experiences with the church.
Okay, and then the second one was
fellowship.
And the third was
overcoming barriers to growth.
Overcoming barriers. Okay. Group three, what were you guys with the church to unbelievers, that wonderful, fun group of people to have around? What would their needs be?
We said they needed authenticity to see that, and also to understand the worship of Christ, and also to see creative forms of ministry, like some non-traditional.
Okay, authenticity, lordship, and sort of a creative form. Okay, and then the unchurched believers. What would three of their needs be?
Unchurched
unbelievers.
Unchurched unbelievers. Relevance.
Okay.
To their lives. Experiencing love from God and from others.
Relevance.
It's relevance of the gospel.
Irrelevance of Christ, relevance to the gospel, of the gospel to the line. And then authenticity in the believer.
And authenticity. Okay. Now, I wrote relevance, love of others, and authenticity. Okay. Now, those are maybe not the best things, but, you know, given what we have to work with, 10 minutes and a flaky little idea, it's not bad. It's real good, actually. And so now let's say that we had spent a lot of time thinking about this, and I mean we were convinced before God Almighty that these really are the needs that we have got to address, and that is what God has put us here to do. Okay. And let me tell you, that kind of conviction does not happen after 10 minutes. That's where prayer and thinking and counsel and reading, and what I'm suggesting here is a revolutionary, but to me reasonable, process in planning, and that is that you start with needs and not with groups. Start with needs and not with groups. The easiest thing to do is say, we had a discipleship group last year. What are we going to do for discipleship group this year? And so you establish a group that, you know, someone once said eternity is anything that started in a Baptist church. that is also true of groups in BSU. And so if you could somehow figure out how to start with needs, and great. If you have a discipleship group this year and you have a discipleship group next year, that's great. As long as you need a discipleship group next year. Right? And to me, this is part of reading the needs of our students. That's why in the leadership team thing, I said we didn't have a leadership team this past year. And the reason why is we didn't need one. And we didn't have any leaders to be in a leadership team either. So that would be two reasons why. So you start with the needs and not with the group. Then what you do is you take, let's say, what should we do? Let's pick one of these as a, which one would you be interested, with these needs, would you be interested in this sort of group brainstorming together on what kind of a groups, how you would form small groups to go with that?
Unchurched unbelievers.
You think is that okay? Anybody? Okay, that's probably going to be the hardest one for small groups, and maybe the one we've done least of, because if it was church believers, you know, well, they need vision. Well, man, we got a file folder on vision Bible studies. got this tape we can dump on them. We can take them down to see Harold Bullock, and we can, you know, we got plans for you.
Let's go with that one.
Okay, so let's take this unchurched unbelievers, and we, after great prayer and thinking and research and counsel, we have decided that these people that we already know we're going to get, we have targeted these people, we are going to have people like this. We, you know, let's say that we have relationships with 15 people like this. All right? Is that reasonable? 15.
Now, are you trying to form a group just for, I mean, in reality, these people would be mixed. All four of these groups would be
mixed. They would all be mixed. But how are we going to meet these needs in these groups?
Meeting them within the context of a group that has all of these types.
Okay.
Or are we talking about setting up a group for people who don't know the Lord and aren't... You know what I mean?
You have just done what I believe is a second brilliant principle of small groups. And you'll find this in your handout. You'll find a list of questions. And that is, you, after you decide your target group, you ask as many questions as possible. Yeah, look at second, third, and fourth pages. Where that came from at the end of this year, before we started our planning process for next year, we sat down, there are three of us working together, and we said, okay, let's think about the questions that we must answer before we can plan anything regarding our small groups this year. So just brainstorming, we came up with this list of questions that we had to answer. We didn't try to answer, we didn't come up with one question and then we tried to answer that. And then second question, we tried to answer that. But we came up with, we said, let's find out what questions we've got to ask. And so that would be a question. And so you'd write down, boy, that's a good question. You know where good answers come from? Good questions. So you ask questions. And the way you, do you know how you get good questions? By having bad questions. You write down a bad question, and then when you go back to try to answer it, you'll go, gee, it was that a stupid question? Throw that out. That's not what we want to know. This is what we want to know. So you ask yourself questions. So one good question would be, is there any way that you can get these unbeliever people together in a small group to do something, or is our ministry to quadrant number 4 going to be scattered through all of our other groups? And if it is, then what groups is it going to be scattered in? And what are those groups going to do that these people are going to accept and not be condemned by? And if those groups have to do that, then is it going to mess up the purpose of that group? See, those are the questions you've got to deal with when you come to figuring out what your small groups are going to look like.
It's funny, often we start with materials. What material am I going to do? Having the thought, man, there should be different types of people within the group.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good.
And so, let's say that we aren't designing an entire set of small groups to fit a ministry, we're just working on this one little subset. Let's say that this group of 15 people are in a fraternity, a frat house.
Can I ask a question?
Uh-huh. Sure.
When you said all the others, it struck a chord in me as to where these people might be found in the other quadrants. Just a thought, I would think. And then you said, who would be able to tolerate them? What would they be able to tolerate?
Mm-hmm.
It would seem to me like, just for fun, I may be jumping ahead of
you. Okay.
Where they would fit probably with the unchurched believers.
Okay.
Because they're the ones who are still out there. They're not going to fit with the church unbelievers because they're a problem. They're confusing. And the church believers, they're not going to fit. It would seem like to me you might find more of them if you targeted number 2.
Okay. That would be a good idea to try that and just see. But for our purposes tonight, just to kind of simplify things, and so mentally we're tracking, these unbelievers, are in a fraternity house where we have two BSU kids that are okay. I mean, these are not Billy Grahams, but they've got pretty good relational skills, and they're respected by the people in the fraternity. They're upperclassmen. And they have developed friendships, and they know these 15 pagan guys who get drunk and sleep with women. You know, in this fraternity house, it has 60 beds and 90 people sleep there every night. Get me? This is that kind of fraternity house. And there are 15 people in here that we found that have said that are open to the gospel in some way. They've come to a BSU event, or they have come to something that these two guys have put together. Maybe they were able to get a speaker in to this fraternity house, and these people responded. So we know here are 15 people that are open. These are not closed pagans who have not thought of God. And there seems to be a movement of God here. Okay? So you look at that and you say, these people need to see the gospel is relevant and Jesus Christ is relevant. These people need to see what real love is about. And we've studied these people. Half of them are single parent families. And three of them are, you know, there's divorce and remarriage, and the others are from pretty healthy families. And they don't know a whole lot about love. They really use women. And authenticity, we feel like most of the Christians they know or have been phony, and that these two people have somehow gotten their attention because they're real. And that's why these people are interested. All right? So this is our case study. Now, so then we go, well, what? It's going to be kind of easy to group these people. In fact, in this situation, it would probably be easier to do something with a group than it would be to pick them off one at a time. Okay? And we're doing that because that may not be true, but we're doing it because we're trying to go through a process of small groups, right? Now, we've got to realize that when you come to small groups, there are just all kinds of groups that you can have. There, you know, just all kinds. And on the, I think it's the back page from Roberta Hessness, who's president of Eastern Christian College in Philadelphia, and a real expert on small groups. She listed these things at a seminar I went to a few years ago. But you've got study groups. You can study the Bible, just the Bible. You know, use a little navigator blank form or something and just study the Bible. Or you can study books. This week, this semester, we're going to study Larry Crabb's Inside Out. We're going to go through his little questionnaire thing. We're going to, you know. And then you could study the pastor's stuff. You know, John Strapazon is preaching here at First Baptist Church Lubbock. His sermons are incredible. And we're going to study his message every week in the dorm, yeah.
I'll be mailing it to you every week.
Or we're going to study this discipleship stuff. Could you send us a tape so we could all keep up with what you're teaching? For $10 a week, a tape?
$15, I'll mention the name of the sermon.
Oh, yeah. All right. So let me ask you this. Would a study group fly over here? Do you think a study group is going to fly?
No.
No. So forget a Bible study. Forget it. Don't even say the word. It is not going to work. Okay. Let's say there are other kinds of groups that are sharing and support groups. Kind of like a prayer group, Concert of Prayer for World Missions, a group that meets 6 o'clock in the morning, prays for the world. Or encouragement group, sharing. Or what about a special needs group dealing with adult children of alcoholics, whatever, ACOA, or substance abuse, or sexual addiction support group, sadist group, or whatever.
Tracking babes.
Yeah. Tracking babes group. Is there any possibility for that kind of need-oriented group?
Yeah.
Okay, so that could maybe work. So we'll put over here maybe need-oriented group. Okay, now, it's interesting. All right, then, let's say there are ministry groups. Do we want to go with this with a leadership group? You know, call high commitment, get, you know, reach all the fraternities for Christ. I don't think they'd be interested. Accountability group, you know. Task-oriented group. Would you guys help us plan a BSU party? No? I tell you, that'd be the biggest BSU party you've ever had. You let those guys plan it.
You know, the only thing on accountability group, that might work if it was things they were interested in, because they want to, like you said, people want to have fun but make good grades.
Okay.
Big things. And so if you could think about that, if you were skilled at
you know, helping people. And that was just keeping on with the relationship.
Like in their studies?
I'm not going to commit to 2 hours a week, 2 hours a week to study.
Okay. All right. That might work. Outreach, sharing kind of group, going through the share seminar?
You know,
probably not, okay? But you see, all of these groups might fit some of these other people. You might see some possibilities and go, you know, that kind of group would really meet the need. And then let's say a covenant group. This would be kind of a mixture group where you'd have a covenant. Typical discipleship team group or something like that where you mix the Bible sharing and praying. How about coming in with our overhead projector and a guitar and having praise songs every Tuesday night? No? Okay. House church, you know. So really, when you start getting down to it, when you're reaching this group of people, your small groups probably do need to be need-oriented. You need to figure out a need, that a felt need, and try to come up with something to meet that need. Now, there are felt needs such as, have you ever studied who Jesus Christ claimed to be, and kind of an evangelistic felt need that would be actual biblical content, and those kind of things work.
It would have to be a while with that group. Let's say you met that semester, let's say with a study group, and it would progress over maybe 2 years, and those guys would stay faithful. Then maybe move them into something like that. Maybe.
I think something like what the Bible has to say about success. They may not be all that
okay. So we're designing a small group, and so we're going to figure out what their needs are. How are we going to know whether they would really be interested in doing that? Ask them. Boy, what a novel idea. One thing I did this year with the group, and I had a Bible study in a dormitory that was probably 75% unchurched unbelievers. I came up with a little 4x6 card, and I listed about 25 topics on that 4x6 card that I thought were okay. At least I knew I could lead a study on them, all right? And so I passed this out, and I said, we're trying to figure out what to study, and I wonder if you could vote and help us, and if you could check 8 of these and just, you know, do that right now. So I went to them and they, well, what does this mean? You know, and I'd explain it to them. And what in the world is this, you know? And so it kind of helped me find out where they were when I was standing there with the card and they were voting. And I collected about 20 of those and took them back and tallied them up. And then I said, okay, we're going to try to hit these. One of them was understanding the Lord's Prayer. Every Roman Catholic checked yes. Unbelievers.
Say it all the time. They don't know what it means.
We spent 3 weeks doing it.
Great. You stumbled on that.
Yeah. Well, I knew I could probably lead a Bible study on that, you know. And you don't want to attack topics that you cannot handle. And right. Yeah. Yeah.
Had you been working at that long before? Where were you?
Yeah, I had relationships there. We had some believers there that were respected, and I'd kind of targeted that dormitory.
Who your believers? Do you say, well, this is Johnny's believer in the group?
They know without me saying. And so we tallied it up, and that's how we found out. And then there were some weeks that I'd go, you know, they'd say, well, you want to come tonight? We're going to study the Lord's Prayer. And this unbeliever would say, I'm not interested in the Lord's Prayer. Go, okay, great. Well, I'll get back with you in a couple of weeks. Let's see, the one you wanted to come to was the one on, you know, whatever it would happen to be. On the second coming of Jesus Christ. Let me know when you're doing that one. And so it was not the kind of group that the leader expected, that everybody's going to be there every week. That gave you freedom to go to people that weren't there this week And they didn't feel funny about it, because they, you didn't expect them to come, and you already knew that. Or you'd see somebody go, "Hey, I missed you. Bible study, where were you? I had an exam. Were you wanting to? Were you one of the guys who wanted to study the Lord's Prayer?" "Yeah, I was. I'm sorry I missed." "Well, I could share with you what we went over." "Oh, okay, that'd be great." So you just sit down, in 5 minutes, you just say, "Well, you know, our Father, you know, what we talked about there was this, and who art in heaven, we talked about this," and you kind of bring them up to date. And so it's an open thing. It's not like you studied, you didn't come to my Bible study. "Thanks, that really hurts, you know." Okay, what would be another, you know what, okay, so we've kind of come up with our areas of discussion. Now, we're going to come up with kind of our modus operandi. Do you think that anything would draw these people together besides meeting Thursday night at 9 o'clock in their room, in somebody's room in the house? What else could we do as a group that would show that the Bible is relevant, that we love them, and Christians are authentic? What else could you do? Okay.
Go to a football game with them.
Okay, you could plan some sort of athletic thing.
You could have some of your Christian buddies show up and join.
Okay, so you could bring along a couple of visitors, people that are outside the fraternity. You have to be, if it's a fraternity, you have to be more careful than that than if it's a dormitory and somebody from this dorm over here.
They don't like that much.
No. You'd need to ask their permission of the group, but they might go with it. So maybe a visitor of another person. Okay, this is my favorite one. Food. Get them in my home. Get them to see my wife and me. Hopefully we won't be fighting that night. Feed them. Maybe have them over some Monday night. Well, you couldn't do a fraternity Monday night because of meetings. But let's say that there's Thursday night football. Have them over for food Thursday night, and then we'll watch. For those of you that can stay, we'll watch the Thursday night football game on ESPN. And
That's where you think
it came. Yeah, that's right. And so you think of something that you can do that's going to sort of build relationships and let them see you interacting with your family or with other believers, and they begin to feel things are authentic. And they begin to see you loving people and really loving them. I am amazed at the impact of a meal in a home with unbelievers. I mean, it blows them away that someone would have them in their home and give them a meal. So let's say we have these ideas, and so we're convinced that this is something we want to do. And so we then begin to think of all the other areas. You know, we do a lot of thinking, a lot of planning just for this one little thing. But this is not all of our ministry. I mean, we are a big ministry, remember? We've got hundreds of students. So what does the planning process for small groups look like? Massive thinking through and massive coordinating, who leads and all that. If you have a small campus, it is still, I believe, a complicated process and difficult to think it through and design groups that really meet needs and to really, you know, impact these people and make sure you're just not shoving the Bible down their throat like they do at Sunday school. I don't know about you, I want my BSU to have more impact than Sunday school has, you know, where you get a leader and a book and hand it to them and say, "Go do it." You know, come on, let's not have those kind of small groups. Now, the second, let me see, there's a page in there, the handout. I don't know where my handout went.
On the floor.
Is that something on the board?
Yeah, this is it. I want to tell you, this is what you're seeing is exactly how I operate, because I misunderstood something. I was being discipled. Max talked about a filing system, but I thought he said piling system. And so I've never learned. And so one of my favorite lines this year that the new staff has said is that I say all the time is, I know it's here somewhere. And the problem is that when I do file stuff, it's even worse because I don't remember where I filed it or where I put the file, you know. Anyway, confessions. So we've spent hours thinking through all the needs of all four of these groups, and we have come up with about 15 groups for our campus, 15 small groups. And so how do we track those things, and how do we see, are we insane or not? Well, we get a little chart like this, and you write the name of a small group. Let's say this is the Beta Fraternity Group. That'd be the name of it. You go, now how often is this group going to meet? Well, that's something we would have thought through. What do you think on a fraternity house group? How often would it be possible for that group to meet in a semester? Troy, what would you say in a fraternity group? How many weeks, how many possible meetings could you have?
A lot of possible meetings, but I would potentially more
than 8. 8? I think that's pretty doable. So let's say, okay, we're going to have them meet 8 times through the semester.
If it was a new group, I would start shorter than that.
Okay, so when I go to these guys to form the group, I could say to them, you know, we're thinking about getting together 6 or 8 times this semester and looking at some stuff, you know, about the Bible, what the Bible says and some of your needs, or if it's not the Bible, just talk about some stuff. Okay, and then what would be the purpose of the group? We've listed the purpose. What would be the maximum size of the group? Do you think, and here's what you'd be, this would be part of your process. You'd say, now Johnny, do you think 15 would ever come? And you'd say, yeah, when you have a meal. And you go, well, okay, well, that's all right. But to an actual study, you think 15 would ever come? Not unless there's a spiritual awakening. Well, how many of these 15 do you think might come on a week? Well, maybe 6 or 8, you know, or maybe 4. And so we want to make our leaders, these two guys that are going to lead it, we want to make them successful. So we'd say, well, there are 15 guys here, and what we really need to pray for is that there would be 4 or 5 that'd come every week. Maybe a different 4 or 5, but 4 or 5 guys. You know, and to give them something that is possible, that they can pray for and think. So size, maximum, minimum size. And I think we'd have to say, if there are less than 4, this is going to feel real funny. And we might not want to do it. Might want to just say, if 3 come for 2 weeks in a row, we might want to just say, you know, this just doesn't seem it's working. Let's wait. Let's kill it till next semester. Let's just go over to my house and eat. And they'll go, oh, all right. You know. And then what's going to happen in the group? And here's where you help your leaders think through, what is going to happen? What are we going to do? Is it going to be a sermon? Well, gentlemen, if the 4 of you would take a seat. Today our subject is sex in your bedroom, okay? And, you know, so we're going to lecture them. What is going to happen in the group? And here again, this is where you as a leader need to help your students think that through. He's going to get a check on the score. Good boy. And then, what time is this thing? It's off? Must be halftime. What time is it? Are we going to meet? And how long is this group going to meet? How long would you say a group of these men in this Beta Fraternity House, how many minutes would they want to meet, you think? I think, you think lower than that, Troy?
Less
than? Okay.
30, and if they want to stay, it's good.
Okay. So, let's say as a staff, we argue about that. And with your students, you get in a big fight about that. You go, I think it should be 32 minutes, really. You know, But you ought to come up with some targetable length of time that your target group's going to put up with. And go away feeling good about. Wish it was longer. Okay? And this, what happens in the groups where you're also going to hassle through materials and that kind of stuff. And see, the material you select is going to impact your time that you spend in your group. And what you want to happen in the group and its purpose, if its purpose is to study the Bible, share what's going on in your life, be accountable in the basics, you're going to have a long meeting if you do it. If you don't do it, what's the first thing that will go in that meeting?
Prayer.
Prayer and sharing what's really going on in your life. Well, if that's one of your goals, then you're going to need to cut your Bible out. Make that shorter. So here again, this is where you got to fight and argue about it and come up with what you really think this group needs. And then it's been real helpful for me to have very clear in the leader's mind and in my own mind to say this is not a group for what? Now, especially if it's with Christians, you could have groups. This is not a time for worship. This is not the group where Joe, the guy who leads music on Thursday night, shows up with his guitar and we sing for 30 minutes. You know, we have other times where we're going to worship, but, you know, in all respect for worship, we're not going to do it here. Or this is not a time for sharing prayer requests. There are groups where this is just not the time to do that. We'll do this over here. And so it is helpful in clarifying this group when you determine what it is not for. And you're clear about that. And that just kind of, and so, but what do you do if every group across, once you look at your group and every one of them across here, this is not a group for Bible study. And every one of them is not a group for Bible study, not a group for Bible study. Not, what does that tell you a weakness of your groups is? You're eliminating Bible study. And so, or this is not a group for real depth sharing. And there are no groups for depth sharing. The way you structured things. What are your students going to feel? They're going to feel like I'm being used. They don't really care. They don't give me a chance to really share that I'm flunking out or, you know, I've got this problem. There's no place for me to do that. So then the length of time, how many in weeks, you know, we've talked about if it was 6 weeks, we might meet every other week. And it would be 12 weeks would be the length of time this thing would go. We'd meet every other week, maybe. Type of group, and maybe we would just say this is a need-oriented group. That's really the kind of group it is. It's a support group that's got an evangelism kind of flavor to it. And then this last question, open or closed, would this be an open or closed group? Open group. Is it okay to have closed groups? Is it okay to know, is it important to know whether this is an open or closed group? Yes. And so, what if you lay out all your small groups and all of the groups are closed? What does that say about your, what, you know? Yeah. Okay, what if all of your groups are open? No training, no real bonding's going to happen, and whatever. Guys, I found this little methodology to just be helpful to me as I plan and think about designing groups to meet needs. Now, the last little step I put in here is 7 keys to a healthy small group. And a clear purpose, a good beginning. Boy, I can just say that good beginning is important. And it'd be better to go 3 weeks into September before you start the group than to start it the week after Labor Day with just 2 people and struggle through. That first meeting is crucial. And it needs recruiting, it needs planning, it needs prayer, and it needs to be focused, and that first meeting is really crucial. We have printed up invitations to give to people, reminders. And at the end of the semester, we'll have people evaluate and say, what can we do to get more people to come? And unbelievers will give you good ideas on that. A helpful leader who's prayerful, prepared, and active. Clear communication patterns. And this has to do with group dynamics. And this is where studying small groups will help you. And these hope people are good at this. Worthwhile content. Growing trust and caring. And I want to say something here about conflict in small groups. One of the best things that can happen to a small group is to have conflict in it. For one reason, everybody's excitement level goes up. Interest level goes up when there's conflict. He the room goes up. Girls go, oh, I'm not going to fall asleep now. You know. But it's good to see, and especially with the Christian group, for students to work through conflict. You know, I just disagree with that, and to see them work through it. I think one of the things we fear is conflict, and somehow we need to see conflict as an opportunity rather than a dread thing to happen. And then centered in Jesus Christ. I think those are helpful to me. And then stages of small group life, this has been helpful to me. That small groups will, all small groups, and ours are semester groups, which is great. It's got tremendous benefits because you can start up. You know, if you've got a bad group, it's going to die and you can end it. But all groups will go through these phases. Exploration. Do I belong? What's expected of me? What can I expect of others? And know this, that when a person walks in, that's what they're thinking. Do I belong here? What are these people expecting of me? Are they expecting me to know where First Peter is? Are they expecting me to bring a Bible? What is expected here? Do I have to know the Bible to be in this group? What can I expect from other people? Are they going to challenge me? Are they going to be kind to me? Are they going to look me in the eye and speak to me, welcome me? What can I expect of them? And if you were to go to a new group, you'd ask these questions. These aren't unspiritual questions. These are just how it is. You know, I bet you, Joe and Dale, you guys didn't know very many people when you came to this group, and you probably had these questions. Am I going to fit in? What are they going to expect of me? Are they going to expect me, you know, what can I expect of them? They're going to, you know. And so there's this initial phase that everybody feels. And then transition. You begin to say, can I trust this group? Whose group is this? Is this group going to work? And in terms of whose group is this, the answer that I would like to see in the small groups we have through our ministry at Nebraska is that the answer to that would be it's our group. It's not the BSU's group. It's our group. We own this thing. And then let's do something. I'm willing to give, risk, and give to others, the action phase. And that's really fun, a fun phase. And non-Christians can be in this action phase. I mean, how exciting it is when you have a group and you're going, gee, you know, why don't we do something? And somebody says, yeah, let's go, boom, do this. And people in the group go, yeah, let's do it. Well, Joe couldn't come out, I'll go get him. And you all go to McDonald's and get a yogurt cone, or you go, and suddenly action starts taking place that you as a leader didn't plan or initiate, but it starts happening. That group begins to have a life. We're having fun together. And then there's the termination. And one of the things that I've learned that's real helpful, and I did it for years without knowing what I was doing, and Mary noticed it because it really irritated her. And it was about finals week or the week before finals week, and I didn't know this. I just felt it and just kind of instinctively did it. I'd go, honey, could we have the guys over to eat just one more time before finals or before they go home or before the end of school? And she'd go, what? Why do you wait to the end of the semester to always invite people over? Good grief. Yeah, you just put everything off. You procrastinate. You know, road to hell is paved with good intentions. And yeah, you know. And, you know, so I would get this consistently, sort of get this lecture when while Mary's out Christmas shopping and trying to get everything together for Christmas, I come and I say, let's have 12 guys over to eat. Yeah. We're not spending our money on Christmas presents, are we? Let's spend it on food for these Bible studies. And then when I studied it, I found how important that last meeting is to bring people together and to answer the question, to actually have a way of doing this. Was it worth it? What did I learn about myself? What did I learn about God? What did I learn about other people? Boy, a lot of our small groups ending, and here again, we're in Nebraska. You couldn't do this in Louisiana, but we have the Lord's Supper sometimes together at our home. We're in a dormitory room, and we try to make that ending time just a time of love and closure, and whereby goes, boy, this has been great. This has been great. I think I'd do this again if I had a chance. We go, well, we'll have a chance next semester. Or we'll have, yeah, next year we'll have a chance. So there is a life cycle of a group. Sometimes you do just have to kill a group. And I've always believed that, you know, if it's dying, let's just put it out of its misery. And try to redeem the leaders. Try to get them out of there. Help them understand why it died. Okay. So this is about what I wanted to share. And let's have some feedback, questions, or whatnot. We ran over a little bit, but
Fred, do you try to get everyone involved in the BSU, involved in a small group?
Yes.
And do you have a strategy for doing that? And then just kind of and follow up that, please.
Yes. Yes, we do try to get everybody involved. We do get everybody involved. We don't just try, but everyone who comes to our regular meetings is involved in a small group. We have more people involved in small groups than we do in the large group. And the way we do it is by checking the names of people that we have on our mailing list and see who's not in a small group, and we go directly to those people personally and say, man, we would love to get you in a small group. And I know that you've got 45 minutes somewhere in your schedule where you can do it. And so, hey, John, how about it? And so if John just says, no, I don't think so, I'll say, well, great. Well, you think about it. And we'll have some new groups starting up soon. And, maybe your schedule will get under control and I'll come back and talk to you again about it. And so then I'll go and talk to him again and again. And again, and we target those people, and we know whether they're in a group or not. So your follow-up.
A follow-up is if you do, then I guess you don't attempt. But if you do attempt to get everybody involved in your group, in a small group, how do you keep the quality of those small groups to a level that they're the type of small group that people would want to go to?
Okay.
You understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
In our attempts to get everybody involved in small groups, because we felt like, small groups is really where it was at, our small groups got to be so bad in some areas that it was a pain to go to small groups.
That's where you have leadership training and leadership tracking. To where you don't just say, oh, you're going to lead a group, tell me how it went at the end of the semester. But you figure out a way of tracking. This semester, Carl Nyquist is going to take our small group leaders. He's going to train them. He's going to meet with them every week at first. For about the first 6 weeks, they'll meet every week. Then they'll meet about every other week to talk about how things are going, pray for needs, and he will know. Carl will know what's going on in every group because that's what he's going to do. And someone has got to do that. You just cannot, if no one is assigned to do that, it will not be done. And so he's just going to have to find out what's going on, track the group leaders. And we try to have two leaders in every group. And someone shared that in someplace this week. And it's part of it. It's just the insecurity of students and their time schedule. that they need to trade off. You know, I got a test coming up, and I really, you know, you lead it these 2 weeks, and I lead it the next, and then you evaluate me, and I evaluate you, and we really know better what's going on in the group. But I would rather have larger groups of believers that have a good quality control than just saying, okay, small groups, you, go out, find a group, get them together, and do something. You know, I'd rather have a larger group that where we are able to really think it through. And small groups are an awful lot of work. Mm-hmm. They are, if you do them right.
What do you consider a large or small group?
I would say, you know, 12 students would be a large group. And then training groups, that's another kind of group. Those can be even larger if you'll break them down into smaller groups when you do stuff.